My name is Guy Madison. I've wanted to kind of do this subject for, 10 years. And the subject is hedges and a way to fair-proof your marriage and how to put hedges around your marriage so that you prevent in advance, you kind of had trouble off at the pass in advance. And that's kind of what this was all about. And I know what it says here is there's practical insights. I was given a book about 8 years ago by my Paul, and if you understand Paul Timothy, I mean the guy that discipled me, and this was the book, Jerry Jenkins, on hedges. This is amazing. Well, I'll tell you that there's actually a new version of it out that came out in 2013 that I'm assuming is probably even updated for technology and the social media issue that has become really prevalent that wasn't that big a deal. The internet was an issue 8 years ago, but social media was not a problem 8 years ago. So I'm guessing. So I would really encourage you guys to get your hands on that. But one of the things in the book, there's several different concepts that he presents about how to build defensive walls around your marriage. But I thought, you know, I need to kind of cite from my own personal examples. And then I hope that you guys will also take some of these, apply them where it's applicable for you, and even create your own. But what I wanted to do, and I'll tell you guys, I am not one that likes to be read to, and so I don't typically like to read to you either. But we have to do this, because we have to lay this foundation. So if you guys can bear with me, I'm going to do something that, you know, it's kind of like go back in elementary school when your teacher read stories to you, because I have to lay the foundation of why and how easy it is to have problems if you don't have hedges in place and defensive walls in place. Starts out, Sue was not the and these are, as far as I know, these are true stories, by the way. So this is makes it even harder to hear. Sue was not the prettiest and certainly not the sexiest woman John had ever seen. In fact, she didn't hold a candle to his wife, but Sue worked for John. He spent a lot of time with her at the office. He could tell she admired him. He liked her, respected her, and thought she was bright, creative, and interesting. He liked being around her, liked her smile, enjoyed her wit. She was doe-eyed, had perfect teeth, and was married. Was John romantically interested in her? The question would have offended him. They were both happily married. They didn't even think about an attraction between them. John told his wife about Sue from the day she was hired. So that's a good, that's kind of a hedge right there, right? If you think about that for just a minute, it's a good hedge. His wife was eager to meet Sue and her husband, and the couples genuinely liked each other. The couple didn't socialize frequently because they lived too far from each other, but Sue kept John up to date on what was happening in her life, and John told his wife. Again, communication. It's all good. Sue and John's wife talked on the phone occasionally. John wasn't starry-eyed about Sue, and John's wife had no reason to believe Sue held anything but respect for John, which was true. Was Sue worth losing a home and a family over? Now, there was a question even more insulting than the first. No woman was worth that. In fact, John used to tease his wife, "If I ever throw you over, kid, at least I won't humiliate you by running off with the dog." It was a joke because it was the last thing on his mind. He was a Christian, active in church, a father of three with a comfortable and happy life. He wasn't looking for anything more or different. He was challenged, motivated, and excited about his job and his career path. He was solid. John wasn't even going through a midlife crisis, so he had no reason to think anything, but everything's good. So he didn't worry when he first found himself, and here's key, missing Sue when she was out of town for a couple of days. He asked his secretary to be sure to let him know when she called because he had business to discuss with her. It was true. And when the business had been discussed, they talked a little more. "We miss you around here, Sue." The emphasis was on we. "I miss you too," she said, "all of you. I look forward to seeing you when I get back." "Me too." Nice, friendly, innocent, and dangerous. But John didn't know that then. When Sue returned, her relationship with John was changed in subtle ways. During a meeting or in a room full of people, they could read each other's eyes in an instant. They weren't reading anything personal. They just knew what the other was thinking about the topic at hand. John could tell when Sue was being circumspect. Sue could tell when John was just being polite. when he didn't really like a proposal but was in kind how he responded. John began to find reasons to be around Sue. Red flag. Not just planting seeds. Red flag. He also found reasons to touch her in a brotherly or even fatherly way. A squeeze of the hand, a touch on the shoulder, a hug, a greeting, or farewell. He would not have described this as sexual or even sensual, but there was more to it than any man's enjoying physical contact with an attractive young female. John was waiting for a cab to the airport as Sue left the office for the day. "The airport's on my way home," she reminded him. "I'll give you a ride." I think about on the surface, that seems relatively innocent, right? I mean, honestly, you're a believer, you're not thinking, innocent. They talk business on the way, of course. At the curb, he looked into her eyes and thanked her warmly. "Anytime," she said. He held her gaze for a moment until the humor of her comment sank in. They both smiled. "You know what I mean," she said. She meant that she would do anything helpful for such a good friend. But both also liked the intimate sound of words that could be taken two ways. In the ensuing weeks and months, John and Sue began slowly to depend upon each other emotionally. He told her things no one else in the office knew, his dreams, his plans, his private ambitions, his assessment of others. They went from telling each other what good friends they were to making their conversations more personal, more meaningful. He called her his favorite friend. I've always been interested in the work world when I hear men who don't know better say about their secretary or their administrative assistant or their executive assistant, "This is my second wife." And they're joking, "Ha ha, ha ha." If I was the wife, that would not be honoring to me. That would, in fact, that probably would hurt a little bit. This is and kind of degrading to the woman being called, "This is my second wife," or "This is my work wife." He called her a special friend. She often told him he was special. Theirs wasn't a dual pity party, bad-mouthing their spouses, or looking to the other for ingredients missing in their marriages. No, they were simply two people who hit it off, liked each other, became special to each other, and eventually became enamored with each other. Suddenly, or so it seemed, the inevitable happened. They justified a few lunches and even a working dinner. When their bodies touched, well, and this doesn't get graphic, so don't worry in case you get nervous. More graphic than, but this is in context of a Christian group of people. So when their bodies touched, while in a cab or in a restaurant booth, neither pulled away. It was natural, familiar, brotherly, sisterly. When he touched her arm while talking to her, he often left his hand there, even after his point had been made. At a convention out of town, even with six others from their office along, they found opportunities to be alone together. It wasn't easy, and though their relationship had not escalated to the declaring stage yet, they knew. They knew. It hadn't been spoken yet, but they knew. There was no one either would rather be with. After a late dinner with everyone from their office, she called his room and said she couldn't sleep. "I'm not tired either," he said, lying. He had collapsed into bed after the long day. "What do you want to do?" "I don't know, just talk." "So talk. You want to go for a walk?" They met in the lobby and strolled the deserted city streets. She thought her sweater would be enough, but the summer night grew chilly after midnight, and as they crossed a bridge over the river, he slipped a suit jacket over her shoulders. She smiled at him in the moonlight, and he put his arm around her. She slipped his hand around her waist. They walked silently for 20 minutes until they came to a dark spot between streetlights. John slowed to a stop, his emotions racing. Sue looked quizzically at him, but when he took her in his arms, they embraced so naturally, so perfectly, it just seemed right. He could feel his heart pounding. He could feel her heart pounding. "Dare I kiss you?" he whispered in her hair. She held him tighter as if stalling to decide. "Your call," she said, mimicking his favorite expression to subordinates. It was all he needed to hear. Never expect this at a NAB conference, did you? But this is a powerful subject. Theirs was one long, soft, meaningful kiss that spoke volumes. They stared into each other's eyes for a slow moment, then headed back to the hotel, his hand gently on her arm. As the building came into sight, Sue stopped. "We have to talk." "I know. What are you thinking, John?" "Same thing you're thinking." "Don't be too sure." "I'm sure, Sue." "You first, boss." "This will never work, Sue. It didn't happen. We go back to our respective rooms, good friends who happen to like each other very much. Her eyes filled. You know me too well. I'm relieved, Sue. I certainly didn't intend this, and I don't want to mislead you. The walk was my idea, but I didn't have this in mind. Nothing happened, Sue. Deal? He struck out his hand. She shook it, but held on. Why do I want to kiss you again, John? I agree we have to end this, but it seems so incomplete. I feel the same way, but we cannot. We must not. I know, she said, dropping his hand. She smiled bravely and headed into the elevator. John stared at the ceiling until 4 a.m, dredging up every negative detail of his marriage. Now think about that. In 12 years, he and his wife had become known as a successful and happy couple. By the time he gave up trying to sleep, however, he had convinced himself that he had never loved her, that the marriage was a mistake, and that he felt something for Sue he had never felt for any other woman, including and especially his wife. Jaw set and mind whirling, John strode to the window and gazed into the darkness. Was that Sue sitting on the low concrete wall in the courtyard below? John freshened up and dressed quickly. He took the stairs to the ground floor and exited a side door. Sue started when she first saw him. Then she sat still and stared ahead, as if resigned that this meeting was somehow inevitable. Sue, you all right? She nodded and dabbed her face. I just have to get over this. Anything I can do? She shook her head. It's not going to be easy working with you. It doesn't have to be difficult, Sue. We just need to back up a few months. We're friends, and we can enjoy that, can't we? You make that sound easy, John. I can't. Why not? She took a deep, quavery breath and fought for composure. She still hadn't looked at him. I'm in love with you, John. That's why. He reached for her, and she came to him. They embraced and kissed, and he told her he loved her too. He led her back into the hotel the way he'd come, avoiding the lobby and the elevators. They trudged up the stairs to her room. He left there 2 hours later in time to prepare for the day. John and Sue shared a delicious, bleary-eyed secret for the rest of the convention. They spent most of every night together, and there was no more talk of how things would have to change when they traveled back home to reality. John and Sue convinced themselves that their love was so perfect. Now here's the deal, guys, that God had to be in it, right? I mean, this is so good. It's so right. God has to be in this. Neither was prepared for the vehement reactions from their spouses and extended families. The anger, the confusion, the accusations drove them closer to each other. I mean, it's us against the world, right? I mean, just the two of us, hey. Within 6 months, both divorces were final, and John and Sue were married. A year later, while Sue was pregnant with her first child, John announced he had made a terrible mistake. He wanted his wife and family back, and he set upon such an impractical and obnoxious approach that he lost his job and his new wife. In the process, he permanently alienated himself from his former wife as well. And kind of wrapping this up, John and Sue's story is representative of several I've heard from friends, relatives, and acquaintances. It has become so common that I cringe when someone says, "Did you hear about so-and-so?" Do you guys ever feel that? It's like, have you heard or did you hear? And it's like, hopefully it's that. If they're young enough, maybe they're pregnant, you know. But the older they get, then you worry, you wonder. Or they have cancer or something else. But this is so common. They may be informing me of a move or an award or a new job or a new baby, but my first dreaded thought is, oh, no, please, not them too. All too often, my worst fears are confirmed. No one is immune. And that's the purpose of this meeting right here. No one is immune. The strongest marriage you know of is in danger today if hedges are not in place. I recently reminisced with several old friends. Every one of us knew personally of several painful marriage failures due to infidelity. Even more appalling, nearly all of us could point to incidents among our close relatives. Can anyone still doubt there's an epidemic of divorce, even within the church, and sadly rampant, even among so-called Christian leaders? In a strange way, the problem is exacerbated in the Christian community because unfaithful spouses are generally not in danger the way the secular community is of contracting AIDS or herpes. The type of person I'm writing about is not characteristically promiscuous. John, in the above example, had never slept with a woman other than his wife. Ironically, while the secular world is cleaning up its act due to fear of deadly disease, Christians blithely proceed, unaware they need hedges to protect them from surprise attacks in their areas of sexual weakness. Try an informal survey on your own. Ask friends and relatives how many people they know who have fallen to sexual temptation. Perhaps you don't even need to ask. Maybe you know firsthand more such stories than you care to recount. If those people were vulnerable, who else might be? Who will be next about whom you say, "I never would have dreamed he would do such a thing"? You know these people. You have to wonder what made them fall. What made them vulnerable? Just as it's the little foxes that spoil the vine, so seemingly small indiscretions add up to major traps. John and Sue allowed themselves to admire, like, respect, and enjoy each other without giving a second thought to the progression of feelings, the danger of developing emotional feelings, or the lure of infatuation. They never reminded themselves of their wedding vows because they had no intention of breaking them. Feelings and emotions sneaked up on them when they least expected it, and then it was too late. Thank you for letting me read. I know that's a long read, and I know it's so when you listen to that. It is almost depressing to read that story, isn't it? I mean, it's like, oh, man, do we live in that kind of a world? Yeah, it is infuriating. It is. And the thing is, at least 10 years ago, I felt like it would have been very controversial. It's already edgy. I mean, Roger and I were talking the other day. It's like, how do you think people will react to the topic? Will it keep people away? Are they afraid? Well, if I show up in this meeting, does that say something about me? No, it means you're smart. It means you're wanting to prevent these kinds of things from happening. But a lot of people would look at it and go, I don't want to be seen in that meeting. I mean, they're going to think my marriage is in trouble or something. Well, I really felt under conviction this season to, you know, as we're picking workshop topics to offer the conference, and I really felt under conviction that this is something, it's a message that needed to be shared. And that story, as dark and depressing as it is, kind of, it laid a foundation, I think, for what we're going to talk about. I think it gets lighter from here, but these are very helpful. That just laid the foundation of how easy it can happen. And we have this impression sometimes of people that have affairs or stumble in one area, even if it's an overnight in a hotel and it's a one-night thing, and which, by the way, can wreck a whole marriage just one time. But a lot of times we think, well, the Christian community is not vulnerable. I mean, we're Christians, right? And the enemy is still there, and I think, like Tom Yakeley said today, the Lord may have our soul, but the enemy is still out there. And if we don't know the wiles of the devil and the ways that he wants to destroy and wreck our lives and hurt our testimony, if we don't understand how to set hedges up, then we're totally vulnerable. And so there we go. The topic, and what I'd like to ask you guys is, so what do you think could have been done to prevent that from happening? And we'll definitely mention several hedges. But what do you guys think? Now that you know the story and you saw how innocently it began, neither one of them, like, this is not going to happen. What do you think could have been done to help it not happen?
Personally, I think that God made us man and woman to be together. And so I personally don't think that a man and a woman can be best friends and it not turn into something that's really.
What's the movie?
My Best Friend's Wedding.
Okay, that's a more current version of it. I'm going to show my age a little bit. When Harry Met Sally, y'all remember that one? And people laugh at that. If they are not old enough in life, they laugh at that and go, yeah, we can be best friends. I'm here to tell you, my wife is my best friend. And the other best friends I have are guys. I don't have any other girls that are best friends, period. And I don't allow myself. Now, does that mean I'm not nice to women? Of course not. I've got 5 girls and 1 son. So I love girls, you know. But all I'm trying to say is that
You're right.
He made us a certain way about
yeah.
what's going to happen.
Yeah. Okay, so take that one step further then. How would you prevent that from happening? You know they can't be best friends, but what would you do to have prevented that from happening?
For me personally, if my husband came along and he said, oh, you know, there's this girl at work, she's really sweet, which he does, I tend to bring her close to me and make her my friend, and now she's close to me and not him, because if she needs somebody to talk to, it needs to be a woman most of the time,
yeah.
and not another man, or it just is going to turn into that naturally, because that's what we got made of.
Right. That's excellent. And I'll kind of talk about that hedge here in a little bit too, what you just said in terms of ministering. Because the Lord puts people in front of us all the time. Some need Jesus, some don't know Jesus. They need to hear the gospel. They need to be encouraged or ministered to. And the initial conversation may be okay. And I'll jump ahead a little bit here just to say, but at the end of the day, I need you to call. Why don't you call my wife? And this is not necessarily a work situation where my wife is going to be hearing about this person all the time. Maybe it's just a random, could be just a random, yeah, you run into somebody and so I say, hey, you know, my wife is great at that. You want to, she'd love to talk to you if you just give her a call. Takes, and I'm out of the equation. I'm done. When they're at work, it's a little more complicated because you see them every day. Yeah, go ahead.
They should have had boundaries like, we're after work hours, we're not going to, no dinners. I mean, you have to draw the line. Somewhere. We can't hang out all the time.
You can't make lunch with each other every day. That can't be like, you can't make that a person of the opposite sex like your best buddy, whether it's at work or whether it's outside of work. If you're going to do that, you better know what the ramifications are going to be.
Right. Yeah. It stinks, doesn't it? I mean, it's kind of sad because I remember when I was growing up as a kid, all the girls wanted to talk to me. It's like they all wanted to come and share their troubles. And I thought that was kind of cool. I had guy friends, but I thought that was really cool. When I got married, I had to sever that. I had to make that had to go away. And no regrets. No regrets. Because I can't handle what are you going to do? Go to your wife and ask for counsel on what to say to another woman that ties you emotionally to that woman. It's just unhealthy. You had a comment.
Question, keep a relationship professional, you know, like I guess she was or he was her boss, mm-hmm. or something like that. How do you keep a professional relationship without being like unkind? Like if he starts talking to you about his day or something and you're like, okay, like, this is gonna make us too close, like, how do you just be like, okay, cool, like see you later?
That is a great, because that is reality. What you're saying right there happens fairly often. But if you are warm and loving and kind in your response, and you're saying, but you mean Christ-like? Well, yeah, that's confusing, okay? No, if you're warm and kind and loving and your eyes are, oh, I'm so interested and all that, then that is a problem. You've got to be professional in your demeanor. We're going to get into touching and all these kind of things that cause you to go down the wrong path. And so sometimes you just have to say, man, I'm really sorry to hear that, and then move on. What you can't do, and it's hard, especially women, they're relationship oriented, right? Really? Well, how'd that happen? You know, so you're inclined to want to continue that, and it feeds his ego, and he's your boss. It's complicated. I'm not saying it's easy. By the way, you have my absolute permission, so I'm telling you, please, to jump in and cut me off if you have something. Well, wait a minute. Okay, so I'm telling you now it's okay.
I want to say,
yeah.
In the midst of that, like, my husband and I have been in a relationship for 6 years. We just got married in July.
Congratulations.
But all of our relationship has been long distance. And a big part of knowing that we were only wanting to be with each other was he has a really high, if anybody else even slightly touches him, brushes him on the shoulder, anything, he's like heightened sense of aware, like, whoa, what just happened? So he doesn't let women touch him, anybody really touch him at all besides me.
I'll give you, this is kind of a silly, and what was your name?
My name's Rachel.
Rachel, okay, so Rachel. And I'm not going to be graphic to the point of embarrassing myself, but when it comes to, for example, getting a massage. Now, my wife would love to have, not a guy, give her a massage. You know, obviously, probably would love, if I was really good, she'd probably prefer it from me. But she'd just love to have a from a woman. Zero interest other than it, she'd like the massage. I told her when I was offered a massage once, I said, because of this issue of touch, for me as a man, I told my, I said, I can't do this, sweetie. So she has given up the massage thing. I know this is kind of corny, but we're talking about because there's so much. Right, because I can't handle the touch of another woman, so I don't allow it. And I keep myself sacred for her. Well, massage is no different. Anyway, that touch thing is huge, and we'll get into that. What I am trying to propose is that for your marriage, you have to set things up in advance. You have to decide in advance, what am I willing to do? What are the off limits? Okay, what am I not going to do? And do it well in advance, consciously, should such a situation like we just read arise. Think about it in advance. What would I do? This is kind of spooky, guys. This is an old statistic from pollster George Barnett. This goes back to 1988. Still true today. And the numbers, not a whole lot different. So this is kind of freaky. Major factors leading to illicit relationships. Surveys show 78% of respondents citing physical and emotional attraction. Well, you go, duh. Well, only 41% cited marital dissatisfaction, discord. Well, you can see that a person might stray because they're not happy in their marriage. That's not just cause, right? We know that. We agree. Not just cause. But it may be a reason. But what I just read to you is that's only 41%. It's the emotional and the physical attraction. I love Job 31:1. I teach all of the men that I minister to. Job 31:1 says, I made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully at a girl. So what do we have to do as men? I don't know that women are necessarily in today's culture maybe too far off from this either. It is you look at an attractive woman before that thought goes to lust. Ladies, I'm not trying to embarrass you or myself, but men have predicted and gone through the outcome that fast. Women, because they're more relational, more emotional, not quite so quick. So what we do is we have bouncing eyes. So when you see something, if you're married, you see a good-looking guy, then out of respect for your husband, bounce your eyes. What Jerry Jenkins says is so fascinating to me. He says, God created us, men especially, to admire his beauty. How do you admire someone of the opposite sex? Again, if you're married, someone of the opposite sex, without it going or lingering into something inappropriate. Women don't struggle with that at the level that men do, but I would propose to you that our culture is changing so rapidly in that area that women now, although not completely like men, starting to struggle with that more than it used to be, even 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Here's the thing, guys. Infidelity. Seems like such a simple word, right, for what it truly describes. And I love, this is powerful. How about calling it what it is? It's kind of like when we say, oh, it's just a little fib. Remember we said that? It's just a little white lie. Call it what it is. It's a lie. Okay, infidelity. Violating one's trust. Breaking one's marriage vows. Being unfaithful. Sleeping around. Fornicating. And this is the powerful one we don't like to hear in our culture today, in our society, and that's committing adultery. Even those with a perfect wife or husband are still capable of lust and senseless seeking of that which would destroy them. So the thing is, I love about the context here that Jerry gets into that I totally agree. We must fear our own potential and place a hedge around ourselves and our marriage. Otherwise, we're headed for disaster. I like this. Jerry Jenkins asked the question, shall we all run scared? What do you think he said? Shall we all run scared? Shall we?
Well, no, because there's...
Forget about biblical fear. I'm saying, should we all run scared?
Run scared away.
Run away, yeah. Should? Yes!
Is it actually, there's a couple verses that support, like, to run.
Right. We're gonna, We got one here on that one. You're going to hear it in any moment. Fear is essential. He goes on to say, look around. Let your guard down. Don't remind yourself that you made a vow before God and men. Don't set barriers for your eyes, your mind, your hands, your emotions, and see how quickly you become a statistic. Maybe it's the verse now. 2 Timothy 2:22.
Yeah.
Flee. Get the heck out of Dodge. Run. Flee the evil desires of youth and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. And then also, go on, beware the not-so-youthful lusts as well. Okay, so sometimes it says, flee the evil desires of youth. I'm 58 years old. You think I don't struggle with this stuff? I'm a guy. That used to shock me when an older guy tell me one time, he's 85 now. I said, you struggle with, I mean, you're like Jesus. I mean, you're up here. And at the time, he was probably 75. And when he confessed, I've had two older guys. When they confessed to me that they struggle with the same things that young guys struggle with, that really, I thought, whoa, you mean you don't get over this? You just don't outgrow that? I'm sorry. And I think there are a lot of men who pray for healing in these areas. But God's got a sense of humor. Sometimes he does not give us that way. We have to exercise self-control. I told my daughter this in a different illustration. It wasn't a sexual illustration, but if I was to say to you, each and every one of you, and just, you don't have to raise your hands, this is a rhetorical question here. Are you believers in Jesus Christ? Do you believe Jesus is your Lord and Savior? If so, then what dwells inside of you? I was asking my daughter, God? Where? In my heart? Jesus is in my heart? I mean, the right answer, right? I said, yes, the Holy Spirit dwells inside of you. Galatians 5:22 says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and what?
Self-control.
Does that mean then that we can not look lustfully, that we can bounce our eyes? Yes, because we have self-control. Do we, or do we succumb to it? If we haven't created hedges, we might succumb to it.
Make excuses too. Like, oh,
that
kind of fuzz my stomach, that must be, like, that means it's
over.
No, that means you should probably run now.
Right.
Like,
run. Run. Yes. Yes. Well, this part will, I'm trying to paint pictures here, and again, you know, I hesitate to read that story to you all because it's depressing. It hurts. And those of you that are married here really understand. That's a scary thought. I love my wife. That's a horrible thought. They were just a good, nice people. Might have been someone you know you can think of. Not necessarily them, but you know, I mean. Here's some things. When you first become aware of the impact the other person has on you, is the time to move into action. And you say, what do you mean by that? How do you feel when you're around that person? How much eye contact do you have with them? Are you magnetized by them? And this is kind of an easy red flag. How much do you look forward to seeing them? I can't tell you in all the years of my life, there hadn't been someone that I worked with that when they weren't there, I was kind of like, God, kind of miss them. I didn't know at the time that those feelings probably were dangerous. And nothing ever happened there, but I'm just telling you, as I look back over that, my gosh, the right time, right circumstances, right situation, who knows? And maybe I hope the Lord was just protecting me. But now that I know, I don't have an excuse. Now that I know, I am without excuse, even though I still have sinful nature. But if you're aware of these feelings, if you have someone that you work with and they're gone a couple days, they're sick, they're on vacation, and when they get back, your heart throbs a little bit, you know. I would tell you that's a red flag, and you better let that process in your brain that's unhealthy. And let me just carry it one step further. Okay, I'm not, you know, the story we cited was two married people. Well, this could be a married, like, and I don't know, are you, and I'm sorry, I didn't even ask your name.
Oh, Kari.
It's what?
Kari.
Yes. Cool. Are you married?
No.
Okay, so here's the danger. Unmarried. Married. Is he married, your boss? Or the circumstance? You're just hypothetical. Okay. Okay. That was good. Keep them coming. You're my plant, right? You guys get where I'm going with this. Single, married, whether employer, employee, it doesn't matter. It's an unholy, has a potential to be an unholy relationship, not necessarily. So temptation can overwhelm us before we know it. Our only hope is to what? The first word in that verse.
Flee.
Get the heck out of Dodge. Run. What's it? Forrest Gump? Run, Forrest, run. Run, flee, get away. And this is what I thought he said. This is so fascinating to me. Okay, rhetorical question here. Oh, and I'm actually okay on feedback on this. This is not my question. But he said, is this verse possibly an admission on God's part that he did not equip us with the ability to subdue our natures in that area? Whoa, that's a valid question. I think, just let that soak in for a minute. Do you think we weren't, what do you think?
I think of Songs of Solomon when the wife talks to the women and says how this is like, don't awaken this. This is
there you go.
Beyond your control.
Yeah, exactly. Is God up there just, I mean, and those of you here that are married know that God has an absolute sense of humor because the deal between man and wife are like, what's the expression, Venus and Mars? I mean, there's like, I sit there and Kirk and Dana Humphreys deal this morning, their marriage thing, and I was sitting next to my wife, and I was sitting there just going, well, I'm under conviction on a couple of things right now. You know, it's like we're so different. And I deeply adore my wife and love her. She's awesome. And I'm sitting there just kind of enjoying hearing this with her, but I'm thinking how different we are. So let's go one step further. So is that a valid question? In other areas, God grants us victory, right? We can win over jealousy, a bad temper, greed, pride. We can. We can get victory over that. We can train our consciences to avoid theft, bad mouthing, lying. Okay, now I'm rhetorical. Means don't have to answer. But wouldn't most of us take a peek at pornography if we were convinced no one would find out? It's probably a question for the guys, mostly. But if there was no accountability, no one's going to catch you. So what's up with that? That frustrates me a lot.
I think it comes down to take all thoughts captive.
Amen. Take all thoughts captive and make them obedient to Christ. That's hard to do. Another way of saying that I love, stand porter on guard to your door of thought. That thought starts to come in. Nope, shut that door out. Not letting that come into my thought. That's hard to do. And that's why hedges in advance are so important. You think it through. And I'll give you some examples here in a minute. But that's really good, yeah.
I think that's the equipping that he gave us.
Yes.
And the warning that he's giving us to say, hey, I'm telling you that you need to do this thing because the devil can't attack you in this area.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that's why we have to be in the Word. I mean, the Word, I heard this guy get up, and an older guy, and you hear a lot of wisdom from older guys, don't we? I mean, an elder, and you, for y'all and the gals, a lot of older women. I mean, they're supposed to teach the younger women. We guys that are older are supposed to teach the younger guys. I heard him say this. It was so profound to me. I've never forgotten it. And that is, in the Word, out of sin. Out of the Word, into sin. Now, you can't always say that's an absolute statement, but I thought that's pretty profound. Pretty profound. It's really hard to go out when you have just had this awesome spiritual encounter with the Lord in His Word, and you've meditated on the Word, and then go out and look at pornography or commit whatever kind. I'm not saying you can't do it. We still have sin nature, but it's difficult. And I always listen to that, and I thought, that's pretty profound. Pretty profound. Okay, so only by understanding mutual weaknesses can a husband and wife truly help each other to overcome them. Confess, this is tough, guys, gals. This is really hard here. Confess to your spouse privately your personal points of temptation. Be blunt about your struggles. Pray together for strength. What that takes, you guys, those of you that are married here especially, that means the person that you're about to share your struggles with, you need to trust that they're not going to beat you up. I don't mean physically, by the way. I mean that verbally. You need to know that they are not going to crucify you because you struggle with this. They need to not be weepy and hurt and, oh my gosh, that's you? And I'll tell you, I was trying to share with my wife about guys and the things that they do. And my wife is not naive, but she's sweet and doesn't have the mind of a man. And I just told her, it was a conversation about roving eyes. And I said, no. Men do that? They look that way? I mean, you know, this has been a few years ago, so she's much more seasoned and mature now. I probably ruined her, right? And, but I told her, I said, I'm sorry, it's the way guys think. Well, she had to hear that to understand also my struggles as a man. Now, okay, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I had to be willing to hear things that were struggles for her. And that isn't always comfortable either. They're not things that we guys think of. They're romance and things that I'm not, like, you know, clued in on sometimes. And so pray together for strength. Here's the thing. What do we do when we're overwhelmed with temptation? If we are weak and we have not made plans in advance as to what we will do, then we may fall to temptation. I said this a minute ago. We must anticipate the dangers and the wiles of the devil, and figure out what we will do to escape. When do you think the time to plant hedges would be and defensive walls around our marriage?
Before you get married?
Exactly. Before the enemy attacks, because he's going to attack. You say, well, that's kind of negative. I believe in the power of the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit's not going to allow that to happen to me. I hope that's true for you. But just in case you're vulnerable to that, then what I would say to you is build those hedges in advance. Now, when you're a newlywed, who wants to think about that stuff? You're gaga over each other, and you don't think about those kind of things. I mean, the marriage is fresh, and it's like, I can't even imagine her having eyes for another guy. I mean, there's no way, because you're it. Add 10 years down the road. Okay, add 2 years down the road in some cases. What helps? Hedge. I didn't number these, by the way. Hedge 1, hedge 2, hedge 3. I'll just say hedge. These are hedges that some of them that Jerry Jenkins suggested and some of them are mine. Come up with your own as well. And I think you should, because you know your own personal weaknesses. Accountability. Hedge. Accountability to close friends of the same sex. Ladies, true for you too. Accountability. Now, you may be uncomfortable, you know, sharing that with another woman. Find the woman that you're comfortable sharing that with and pray for that. I really believe God will bring that person to you, and that way you have some conversation. Here's the thing I really caution you on. Make sure that this person, and this is guys and gals, this is like when you're finding a Paul. I'm calling Paul generic, okay, like generic, be it female or male. That you admire their example, that they're not going to be the ones necessarily who take your side. They're going to look objectively at the marriage. And the goal is to help the marriage. It's just because I meet with a guy and the woman does something offensive, I figure he probably caused it anyway. So half the time, I'm kind of sort of not kidding there. But just ask my wife. I've confessed many times to, I know, honey, it was my fault.
She called in those circumstances for that we should most likely be going to mentors that are older than us rather than those people that are the same age that you're supposed to be using as like your ironing, sharpening iron.
Yes.
Because of the potential of it actually backfiring on your relationship.
Yeah. You want to meet with someone that you know is spiritually mature. You admire their walk. Well, let me back off that. You know they have a walk with the Lord, that they're in prayer daily. They're in the Word daily. I mean, and there's exceptions to daily. I'm not going to be religious about that, but that they have a walk with God that you really respect and that you trust them and that you know. And I'll give you an example. A guy, to this day, is a friend. We had talked about doing a discipleship relationship, and his marriage was a mess. And by the way, they're divorced today. It broke my heart. He was kind of having some struggles He wasn't unfaithful or anything like that, but he was just, you know, having some struggles, and he didn't trust her. She calls me and proceeds to unload all of the issues she has with him and about their marriage. And Guy, can you help? Guy, please. I will tell you, now I was wise in the ways of the devil when this happened. This was probably 10 years ago. And I knew this was unhealthy because this could cause, I mean, here I am, the nice guy discipling, mentoring her husband. I come in and I talk to her to help her. And immediately I thought, okay. And I call my wife. I said, and I told this gal, I said, you need to call my wife right now. I can't help you. I love you guys. Please don't call me. Now that was hard to do because I basically was kind of like rejecting her. But I also handed her off to my wife. Those are the kind of things that, you know, the way I look at it, hey, she doesn't like it, I'm protecting my marriage. I'm in battle with an enemy, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to protect my marriage. Anyway, I throw that out there because those things you're talking about backfire. There was potential there, and she was cute, she was attractive, not that many years different from me. Not cool. The Lord protected me, and I didn't have to deal with that. So accountability, one that we can admit our weaknesses to, ones that will bust our chops, so to speak, if we trample all over our wedding vows. I'll give you an example. Accountability. Young men in the past that I have met with often succumb to the temptation of pornography when his wife left. She'd go run errands, and now he's at home alone, and even with the kids around, little kids, and he would jump on the internet and really struggling with pornography. So what I told him, and I'm thinking, okay, we can do a Bible study on purity. And we can do a Bible study that addresses all the scriptural verses that deal with temptation and the importance of purity, biblical purity. And I thought, okay, we've done all this. Let's get practical. What are some practical things that he needs to do? So I said, are there any projects that you need to do in your house that you just never quite get to? What happens is she might be gone 2 hours. I said, need to clean out the garage? Yeah, garage is a wreck. Okay, all right, so that's your next project. Or you got toilets to fix? Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do have a leaky toilet. That's your project. And when this happens, I want you to check in with me, text me, and report to me. And it so far has worked very successfully for him. Why? Because he planned in advance what he would do when that temptation arose. And I love that. That was the Lord that came to me. What happened was, if he knew in advance, then he could do what again? What's that word? Huh?
Prepare.
Yes, flee. Flee, sorry. Flee. He knew by preparation that when that time came that he could, you know, that he would flee. Doesn't that say maybe that if, remember when we go back to that comment that Jerry made about, did God equip us to handle this? I mean, maybe it's just something we're going to have to struggle with, maybe. Maybe. Or did God equip us? So what he did equip us to do is flee. Does that mean if you struggle with drinking, do you go hang out in the bar with your friends? Probably not. Well, I'm going to share the gospel, though, with people. I'm going to do it at the bar. If you have a problem with alcoholism, you're probably going to have some problems. If you have struggle with women, if you have struggle with men, then the places that those could be a problem for you, you don't run to, you flee from. And I tell the guys this always, that there's software technology that you can have in place called Covenant Eyes, just one of the ones I'm familiar with, that kind of reports to an accountability person every site you've gone to. You know, I love to get the report from my guys that says, report looks good for. And then there are times when it says, might need a review. Well, I know what's happened. He has gone down the path of inappropriate, you know, and gotten on some sites that he shouldn't. Accountability is humongous. I know it may seem harmless to some, and this is the issue of pornography has become so, I think the word I'm looking for, pervasive in our society that now women look at pornography too. That, when I was growing up as a kid, it was all a guy thing. It's changed a lot. A lot more women struggle with it now. And here's the way I look at it, guys, pornography. It's a form of unfaithfulness because it causes you to fantasize about somebody other than your spouse, even if you never act it out. It's still a mental thing. And what did Jesus say about that? I mean, if you're angry at your brother, that's as bad as if you committed murder. If you lust in your heart and your mind, that's the same as if you've committed adultery. That really, that hurts. We're all flesh here. It's very addictive, like cocaine, heroin, very difficult to break free from. If you struggle or get into that kind of thing, you need to reach out to somebody to get help. James 1:13-15. Interesting, though, what God says. When tempted, no one can say, God is tempting me, for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. For each one is tempted when by his own evil desire he's dragged away and enticed. And after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when full grown, gives birth to death. So what's the path of sin? Death. Right? Do we all agree there? That we know that? How about this? 1 Peter 2:11. I love this one. Dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Don't do it. Hedge. List five reasons. Now think about this. This is really cool. List five reasons you want to experience a lifelong marriage. And then commit five steps you can do towards marital longevity. In the name of brevity, I won't get into that a lot, but give me an example. Give me an example. Why? This is y'all's answer. I'm not giving you an answer, not rhetorical. Why do you want to be married for the long haul?
To give my children a better sense of what family should be.
Okay. A legacy. Break up the legacy and divorce screws up the legacy. Now, happens. Divorce happens.
I think it becomes almost like a stronghold or on families, a generational curse kind of thing for some families, and I don't want that for my children.
Amen.
And that as you have relationships that last longer, the individual's love grows more towards each other, and you become more intimate with each other, and how much you know each other, nobody else knows you know.
Yeah, that's so right on. And I'll tell you, my wife said one time, we're kind of joking with each other, and she said, you know, if you die, I won't remarry. It's too hard. And we're kind of joking and kind of serious about that, because getting to know someone over a long course of time is an effort and an exercise. Can you imagine divorcing and starting over again with someone new? That sometimes sounds fun. I'm telling you, it's hard work.
No.
And the world says, you've been married 3, 4, 5 times. That's the world. I'm telling you, the Bible doesn't say that. We live in a culture that promotes it, but the Bible does not. Okay, thank you. Okay, Hedge. Recognizing danger keeps you on the path to victory. And I'll explain. Recognizing danger keeps you on the path to victory. Again, going back to the wiles of the devil, what's he trying to do to you? Here's an issue, guys. Recognize infatuation for what it is. We can all relate a little bit. Someone that you work with that you really like, and you're kind of attracted to them, but you know they're off limits. I mean, if you're married. If you're not married and they're not married, that may be your future spouse, which is okay then. But if you're married, then you can't. But you have these feelings that you can't help. So here's some ways to help you, because that way you break these ties of commonality with them. So here's some things. They're absolute, I call them non-negotiables. Refrain from touching them. You say, well, duh. Well, just think about yourself for a minute. I'm going to confess this to you guys. I'm kind of a touchy guy. I'd be very careful, because like your husband, was it Rachel?
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, he's very sensitive to that. Well, I might be totally platonic in my touch. And it's not going to be inappropriate anyway, but I might be totally platonic. You may be in a crappy marriage right now, or in a crappy relationship, and that someone stroked you. You know what I mean? So refrain from touching them. Again, keep in mind, these are people that you know borderline you might be infatuated with. Be careful how you look in their eyes. Never be alone with them. Never flirt, even in jest. And this is kind of common sense here, but it isn't to everybody. Never say anything you wouldn't say if your spouse was there. I mean, that's kind of the filter. That's the filter for me. I wouldn't say something to some gal that was flirtatious with my wife standing right there. Well, does that not say a lot about what I shouldn't say at all? Right? It's like my kids, I tell them this, to say, would you say that in front of your grandmother? In front of grandmommy? No. Why'd you say it here in our home? That's our filter, you know, so... So what can you do if you feel that surge or charge when you meet someone new? What triggers your interest in someone of the opposite sex? These hedges must be planted well in advance. We've talked about it. You get in that drift well in advance of even meeting someone else. And again, be careful of relationships with members of the opposite sex. Another hedge. List common interests that allow you and your spouse to share not only quality time, but quantity time. Celebrate your differences, talk and pray with your spouse about the ways you're the same as well as the way you're different, and then find common interests. That's a cool thing. Do some things that are fun as a couple. And here's the thing that you'll learn about marriage. A lot of times, if a woman likes to shop and a man likes to hunt, and neither the opposite likes to do those things, then find something that you both love doing together and shop a little less and hunt a little less. Invest in your marriage. I promise you it will pay big dividends. Another thing too, when children see these healthy differences and you show appropriate amounts of affection in your marriage, that's healthy. They need to see that. Our kids need to see mommy and daddy love each other. They need to see that they can touch each other. Just be appropriate, of course, but another hedge. Never be flirtatious. When someone says something flirtatious, sometimes the temptation is to go along with it and play it out. But we must resist it. It's dangerous. It's also mental. Now, rock your world here. It's mental and emotional unfaithfulness. Flirting with a gal or ladies flirting with a guy means that you're not giving all to your spouse. You're diffusing from a really vibrant marriage by doing that with some stranger, in essence. If you want to flirt with your spouse. Guys, send her a note. Girls can do the same thing. You know, guys, send her flowers. Wink across the room. Blow a kiss. Play footsies under the table. Whatever. So why it's so important that couples avoid adultery? We must build hedges around our hearts, eyes, hands, spouses, and marriage. The Bible puts adultery, we said it a minute ago, in the same class as murder. Therefore, it's not only a threat to our marriages, but our very lives as well. I won't get into Ephesians 5, 1 through 7. It's in here about being imitators of God as dear children, walk in love. So another one, though, I will read this one from Proverbs. I don't want to embarrass myself or you, but I think it's important. Drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad? In other words, are your eyes roaming? You're looking around. You know, you're married, right? You're looking around, checking out the landscape. Let them be only your own and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. As a loving deer and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured with her love. For why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and be embraced in the arms of a seductress? Another hedge. Meetings with the opposite sex should only take place in public or with at least one other person present. Very important. If you can. If you can. I like this, what Jerry Jenkins says. This is so cool. Jerry's philosophy is that if you take care of how things look, you take care of how they are. Therefore, if we follow the biblical injunction, which is 1 Thess 5:22, this is from KJV, if we follow the biblical injunction to abstain from even the appearance of evil, then we will actually abstain from the evil itself. That's pretty strong. Think about it. Why we don't do the certain things that we do? This is the tangent, but I'm trying to give an illustration here. Abstain from evil, okay? The appearance of evil. Drinking biblically, for example, having a glass of wine and beer, Bible doesn't say anything against it. Drunkenness is the issue scripturally. My wife and I made a commitment to not drink, though, in public at all. Why? Because you're sitting over there going, that's Guy and Jennifer. wow, look at them, they're drinking. Well, we may have not taken a sip out of the glass. We made a personal decision that we didn't want to give the appearance of evil. Other people have no conviction about that. That's a Holy Spirit deal. That may not apply to you. I'm saying that seriously. This is between us and the Holy Spirit. But that doesn't apply to everybody. But that's just an example of the appearance of evil. And I'll give you an example about meetings of the opposite sex. At one of my former jobs, I let the females know, you guys are going to laugh, and women, please don't laugh at me. But I didn't know them, so it wasn't offensive. They couldn't know that I didn't have any feelings for them. They didn't know me. I didn't know them, so it wasn't personal. I said, I just want you guys to know. And this is after I've been there a few days. It wasn't the first day. Not that crazy. I just want you guys to know, we go do meetings. We'll probably go separate cars. Probably not going to ride in a car with you. And I said, nothing personal, but that's a hedge I put around my marriage for my wife to honor her. Also, I tell you, never give counsel to someone of the opposite sex. Not if you're a non-ministry person. I even question whether you should in ministry. Never in private. Hedge. Never drive anywhere alone with the opposite sex, if at all possible. Kind of goes along with never have meetings alone, right? Don't get in a car. Why? Because you can have intimate conversations in a car. No one can hear. There's no accountability. That's kind of dangerous, you know? Hedge. Never dine alone with unrelated members of the opposite sex. That is, what do we do when we date? You go out to dinner. Why? Break bread. Is there some bonding that goes on when we break bread with a friend? Why does the Bible talk about breaking bread and we break bread together? When you go with someone of the opposite sex, you're breaking bread. You're dining. And you say, well, my job just doesn't... Okay, if you have to, let me just tell you what I've done. There are times when I had to go in the car with another woman. I had to go to dinner. But man, I avoided it like the plague and I ran as often as I could. If I ever had to, I called my wife in advance and I said, honey, I just want you to know, at 9 o'clock I have a meeting. So-and-so and I are going in the car. When I'm done with the meeting, I will call you and let you know that I'm back. And she is like, honey, you know you don't need to do that, but I'm honored that you do that. I appreciate that because she trusts me. But you build trust by doing things like that. Wrapping it up, checking in at a hotel before going to the room, ask the clerk to block access to adult movies. Better yet, say in a hotel doesn't offer them. How about that? There's no temptation. When I say never travel alone with members of the opposite sex, I mean if it's in your control, don't go to a hotel in your company where someone of the opposite sex is staying in that same hotel. It's trouble. It's potential trouble because you could be alone. Ask the person booking it, please put me in a different hotel. If that sounds really cheesy, and they say, we're not doing that. Are you kidding? Because that's the world talking. Then say, please. And if you have to go to the check-in at the front desk and say, I need to, wherever so-and-so is, I need to be at the other end of the hotel on a different floor. Now you say, that's just, guy, come on, that's just dumb. I love my wife. I don't care if people think it's dumb or not. I want to protect my marriage, right? When using social media, never connect with an ex. Everybody agree with that one?
Yeah.
Okay, happens all the time, though. All the time.
That's a rule for our relationship. We are not friends or communicate with past relationship people.
Yeah, there's not a single person on my Facebook that I ever dated. Now, there are girls I went to high school with, college with, that we connected for different reasons. And I'm even a little sensitive about that. We're both very careful. Okay, wrap it up. Be careful how you touch an unrelated member of the opposite sex. Remember, we talked about touching. Crucial. Yes, you had to.
I just have a quick question.
Yeah.
What does it mean by connect? Because I can understand like connecting with someone and then just being like, hey, like, how's your life? I'm not friends with. I just am like
we don't do that.
Yeah. Facebook friends with any of that. Okay.
Yeah.
We don't say
nothing.
Nothing.
I don't even look at them.
Zero contact. For real. For real.
It just creates problems.
Jealousy, potentially. And if your spouse ever finds out, then nothing may have happened, but she may lose trust, okay? I hate to be that guy that went long. I'm so sorry. There's just so much content to share. So I'll leave you with this. Touching, being touched, embracing, being embraced is so common in our culture today. And there is some cultural issues with it, you know, and customs about that. But you must tread very carefully in that area. If you embrace somebody, with a woman, it's typically the old, like, I'm like this with them. If I'm going to hug, it's never an embrace. And it's typically they're on the side or this way, like this. And I know that if I did it in public, there's no issues with it. But if I'm ever alone privately, it's zero touch. Zero. And then finally, Ephesians 5:15-17 says, be careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. Last two hedges, pray together daily. That sounds crazy. Do you know that I put on my reminder, 11 p.m. at night, pray with Jennifer? We used to do that every night. I did that recently again. I thought, I got to do that again. So it's on there. Pops up. Sounds kind of corny, but it reminds me. And then finally, have lots of fun together. Laugh often. When you laugh and have fun, those actually help you not want to linger with somebody else that seems more interesting to you. So let me just finish with this in prayer. Lord, thank you so much for these guys' patience and respect. And I just pray that you bless them, you protect them, you put these hedges about each and every one of them, Lord, and let them communicate the message to anybody that they know that needs it as well. And just bless their day, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen.